5:10.
And the phone says it's 10, so we'll start. Good morning, everybody. It's May 15th, 2020. It's 10 a.m., and I'm calling the meeting to order of the Story County Board of Supervisors. We are originating our call from the administration building, Story County. Public access is being provided via conference call. In the room here, we have myself and Supervisor Olson and some employees, and we asked Supervisor Heddens by phone this morning. So I would start the meeting first by asking everybody who's on to mute your phone if possible. And if you need to talk then, if you've muted a desk phone set that you're on or your phone, you have to mute that and then do *6 to unmute. So two steps. Are maybe necessary, depending on how you're sitting there. There's also a text number if people want to text us any comments. I'll start by entertaining motion for adoption of today's agenda.
I would so move.
This is Lisa, second.
Okay, motion by Olson, second by Heddens. Olson?
Aye.
Heddens?
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Agenda adopted. We are meeting in by conference call because the meeting in person is impossible or impractical at this time because of the guidance about having no whoever just came on. Your phone is making noise, the noise we've had a problem with quite for some time. Can if you could mute yourself if you're using any kind of headphones that might have a battery issue, could you not use those, turn those off? We're getting the noise again, so I'm going to have to ask the last person who came on to mute yourself. And if I say something again, I may have to ask you to get off and try to get back on. Okay, thank you. Meetings in person is impossible or impractical at this point because of the guidance of having no more than 10 people in a public gathering. I don't think we have anything that has less than 24 hours notice on the agenda. So I'll go on and to number 6, discussion and consideration of items brought before the board with a request for immediate action. And we have Alyssa Wignall here to discuss revised temporary employment practices and policies. Good morning, Alyssa.
Good morning. So we've had this policy in place since March 20th to help us get through this pandemic. And the state at one point recommended self-isolation for anybody that had traveled out of state or across state borders. That recommendation is no longer being made by the state. So I went through and they issued new guidance. May 7th was the date on the document that I saw. So I just went through our policy and updated it based on the Iowa Department of Public Health. Okay. So minor changes, but just wanted to get that taken care of. So I do plan to reach out to the union too. We've got that language in our memo of understanding. I mean, it's not enforceable anymore because there's no longer a recommendation from the governor. So I will entertain any questions.
Do the board members have any questions about the proposed changes?
This is Laura. I have none.
I do not.
Okay. In that case, I would entertain a motion to approve the revised temporary employment practices and policies as presented.
Thank you.
This is Lisa. So moved.
Second. Laura.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, Heddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Approved. Thanks for keeping us updated on that. Okay, the next thing is Dr. Edelman on yet? Okay.
Yes, I'm on.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Great. Yes, we can. Thank you. And Dustin, you're still on.
I am. Thank you.
Okay. We're a little early, but thanks for being on. We have a presentation and discussion of a small business relief fund. Dr. Mark Edelman and Dustin Ingram. So take it away.
Yeah, thank you, Linda. Thank you, Linda. You know, our organization has been sharing this resource, the Small Business Development Fund, through our website for several weeks. And as I've become more familiar with it, and I'll let Dr. Edelman speak to the specifics of it, but as I became more familiar with it, I wanted to share it with you in the context of the request you received recently for financial assistance and in the context of the survey that we've been creating to assess the need in our communities for assistance. Because there's a need, there's an ability for municipalities and for the county and for governments to create sub-funds within this organization with those dollars restricted to a specific geography of applicants. So, of course, you know, this isn't the understanding that the Board of Supervisors may or may not decide to do anything, but the information gathering is helpful nonetheless as we, you know, explore the needs in our towns. So I'll let Dr. Edelman speak more to this. He's the director of the Community Vitality Center at Iowa State University and has had a role in really shaping this program and creating it, and I believe administering it as well. So I'll give him the floor to explain what it is, how it operates, and the ability of the county to create a sub-fund. So thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time and interest in this topic this morning. In my extension role at Iowa State, I've been involved for the last 10 years to try to address some of the gaps in access to capital issues. And so I helped organize the Iowa Microloan Program and then also the Iowa Community Capital Program, which are two separate 501c3 nonprofits that do different kinds of financing in areas where there are gaps. The Iowa Community Capital nonprofit is the one that's involved with about a dozen, at this point, a dozen nonprofits and organizations that have formed an alliance to create an Iowa Small Business Relief Fund. And the Relief Fund accepts donations and contributions from a variety of different sources, and this has all come about in the last couple of months since mid-March. A website was created to take donations as well as to take applications for small business emergency relief requests. The organizations that are involved are those that whose clients are in particular have been somewhat underserved. Many are women entrepreneurs, minority business, small business owners. The program is designed for small businesses with one to seven employees. And the grants are smaller than the state and federal relief programs. But we noticed early on that the federal programs oftentimes, because of the way it's channeled out through the banking system, many of the underserved smaller businesses have not been able to gain access. And so that's the thought behind the Small Business Relief Fund that we've created. Our legal counsel indicates that during declared emergencies that nonprofits do have or afforded a little greater access or flexibility by IRS to provide emergency grants to small businesses under certain circumstances, and one being a declared emergency, and also that the emergency causes severe impacts on the businesses, and they're important to the community economy. So that's really the purpose behind this activity. The Iowa Community Capital is a what's called a community development financial institution. It's certified as a nonprofit CDFI by the U.S. Treasury, and so we do have from time to time access to some additional CDFI funds from the U.S. Treasury to help with our programs. Aside from this emergency assistance fund, Iowa Community Capital has managed a small peer group lending program for low-income entrepreneurs, primarily female and minority in the Des Moines area for the last 5 years. Using the Grameen methodology that has achieved a 99-plus loan repayment rate. So we have other programs like that that we're involved with, but this latest one last 2 months has really been serving as the fiscal agent for the emergency relief fund for small businesses for this alliance that has been organized. That, in a nutshell, is what we've done, and we're open to considering what Destin has suggested, if there's interest in Story County in doing something of that nature. So let me stop there and see if there are questions or your thoughts.
Let me start with Supervisor Hedden. Do you have any questions?
Not really at the moment. Sorry, I'm kind of also rereading through the documents that he just described as well.
Okay, well, we'll come back to you. What do you think then? Supervisor Olson?
Hi. Yeah, thank you for making us aware of this program. I'm very interested and glad to see it. My first question is, does unemployment count as state or federal relief? There are a few small business people who are qualifying for unemployment. But would this still eliminate them from getting a grant?
Well, this particular relief program is for small businesses. So it's for things that it's for the business entity professional person, perhaps, that is an independent business person as well.
I understand that. You just said that if someone had received state or federal relief, and I'm just asking if state or federal relief would eliminate that professional person who's incorporated as a corporation, and they may be still a one-person entity, a one-person operation, but legally they might have been able to claim some unemployment.
Well, is it the case the unemployment is to the individual, but this grant is to the corporation?
That's what I'm asking, yeah.
Would that be a fair summary of it, Dr. Edelman?
Yeah, it could be, I don't know, we might want to seek, on that particular case, we might want to seek our legal counsel's opinion on that. The primary focus for this, we have specifics in our grant agreement that enumerates the items the grant can be used for and not used for. It's not really a substitute for. It's not to be used for the same purposes if a person receives federal or state aid, but typically it can be used for paying rent or utilities, insurance, things that that the federal aid that has been received does not pay for.
Okay, well, thank you. I'll let you follow that up, but I think you will come across some people who, because of their their organizational status could be a sole provider, but still maybe have expenses, okay? Then my next question is administration. You're the administrative agency. What is the percentage of a fee if Story County were to commit money? What's your admin fee, your admin overhead?
Well, currently for funds that are going for this emergency relief, we're not 100% goes for relief fund. We aren't charging an administrative fee on it.
Okay. That leads me into my next question, because is related to the underwriting requirements on these loans, because if Story County committed, let's say, a five-figure amount for Story County small businesses to meet other qualifications, is it an onerous underwriting process like it has been with the state money, and particularly as far as having to present P&Ls, all of that information, or is it a more simplified standards process about what you'd be asking from these businesses?
Well, our application process is online on the website. Generally, are asking for more simple information. A balance sheet is requested on the application form, as well as a P&L for some months this year and last year during the same first quarter period. In the second quarter of last year.
Thank you.
And then a brief description of how the small business has been impacted. The scoring process then involved representatives from the Alliance organizations that review, at least three people review each application and make a recommendation in terms of the grant amount, which ranges from $500 to $3,500 in our current program. So these are not loans; these are grants to the small businesses in that amount. So far, we've received about
five. No, just to say, Mr. Edelman, thank you for clarifying that. This is Lisa, because I had heard the word loan, and then I was looking in your write-up, it said grant. So thanks for the clarification.
Yeah. We've received about 500 applications at this point, and have evaluated the first couple of tranches of applications, and the first round of grant checks went out yesterday.
Okay. So, and as I said, when I began to ask my question, I tied it to the admin cost, because I just see that even these organizations that are part of your partnership, that's time that they're devoting to these. And so I'm just kind of wondering, at what point then would it be practical for you to charge some kind of admin fee if it helps speed up the underwriting process? I'm using the term underwriting. I'm a former lender, okay? And then I think that's the term, yeah. So, but the whole point is somebody applies, they fill out your paperwork, and then it gets it reviewed. If you've got a lot of people that would be coming in with the applications, it sounds like 500, that's a lot of applications already. And it's all volunteer effort. Wow, that's interesting. I mean, it's admirable, but it may be slow.
Do you have more questions?
I don't, sorry.
That's fine. Dr. Elman, this is Linda Merkin, and I have just a few questions. Who manages the funds?
Iowa Community Capital is the fiscal agent. Our administrative office is, and I should clarify, because I was introduced as a Professor Edelman at Iowa State University. I do wear in my extension role, I do wear several hats. Since I have worked to try to create external nonprofits with missions that are aligned with Iowa State University Extension's mission. And so now I'm going to shift hats and talk about Iowa Community Capital because it is a separate nonprofit. Its administrative office is in Boone, and the president of Iowa Microloan also serves as the administrative secretary for Iowa Community Capital. His name is Craig Downs, and he's had 27 years of community banking experience and 10 years of microfinance administration experience. And so our the funds that we've received for the emergency relief fund, which pledges and funds at this point are up to about $180,000. Are based in ICC's accounts in Boone.
And Iowa Community Capital is a 501c3, correct? No.
Correct.
Okay, so there are fiscal audits and there's oversight from a board of directors, I presume?
Yes.
Okay. And you said that the community development capital, and then there was a word I didn't get, was certified by the U.S. Treasury.
Yeah, Iowa Community Capital, this organization,
okay.
This nonprofit, is what's called a certified community development financial institution.
Let's
put it this way. In my role in extension, part of what I have tried to do over the years is to identify sources of federal funds that Iowans have not taken advantage of to the same extent that other organizations in other states have. And one of them is the Community Development Financial Institution Fund, which is in the U.S. Treasury. It's targeted to low-income populations. There are CDFIs in Iowa that focus on housing. And there's one also based in Ames that works with folks who have disabilities. Ours provides financial products and services for entrepreneurs and small businesses.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Edelman. This is kind of my final question, and first I'm going to kind of preface it with a statement. Dustin Ingram did call me about this program the other day, and one thing that I told Dustin and asked him to just share with you is that last week, I believe it was, when our board adopted some revisions to our general assistance program eligibility, and that we know will have a fiscal impact coming up probably into next fiscal year, and because we are concerned about what's going to happen with public revenues, and we talked about this at the board table. We did say at that point we probably, and I'm just saying, repeating what I'm saying, we said we would probably be taking a pause before we were going to be looking at committing any more funds.
Excuse me, this is Supervisor Olson. I didn't interpret it right that way, but I'll go back and listen to the audio.
I think that would be good.
Yeah.
So, but what I said to Dustin, because of that, I said, you know, I didn't want you to think that we might be, you know, today saying we have some money to invest here. My question is, how long do you see offering this program?
Well, my sense is that what we're facing is a historic type situation where we've basically have shut off our economy. And so it's a period that we'll go through where there will be the immediate impacts that we've experienced the last month and a half. And I anticipate that as we begin to open up businesses and start to recovery, that we'll end the initial impact phase, which probably may last till June or July. But from then on, it's going. There's going to be a lot of focus on recovery, that might take 5 years or so. The last recession, we had the Great Recession in 2008, took us about 5 years before we got back to some sense of what people would consider to be normal. I would see, you know, one of the things that we're kind of looking at is leveraging our additional funds to see one program that's not used in mid-Iowa is the EDA revolving loan fund, which for a local match of about 20%, you can access 80% of the funds for a revolving loan fund. It's sort of a recovery fund tool, but that would be something that would be down. You wouldn't want to do to start that. You might want to apply for it now, but you wouldn't want to start that until you begin to start the recovery phase, would be my guess. But right now, we're still in the emergency phase, and we anticipate that this initial emergency phase is going to take most of this quarter, second quarter of the year, to get through before we're ready to move on to the next our normal programs of recovery.
Okay, thank you very much. Supervisor Olson has a follow-up.
Yes, I have a follow-up based upon the immediate. We have received a couple of inquiries about the availability of some immediacy funds to keep operating or to make up, okay? So in the event that the Board of Supervisors would look at committing some money toward an immediate recovery thing, I am going to listen to that audio because, like I said, it's not how I understood it. But in the event we would do that, would you be able to take those monies and get them distributed by, say, the end of July? Or would the process such be that even if the Board of Supervisors committed some money right away, that it would most likely be looking at into taking care of the more long-term impact, which you indicate will start in August?
Yeah, this is all sort of new discussion. We would be flexible in working with you, there are different ways that perhaps that you could consider something like this. I don't know. One would be, our process would be driven by how many applications would be received from Story County. Mm-hmm. If you were to make some available and it wasn't all used, it could potentially, if you use sort of one tool, could revert the funds back to you that were unused. Or it could be used as seed funds for matching funds for some sort of additional revolving loan applications down the road. But that's your decision. We're a nonprofit. We're looking for ways to help out in this emergency set of circumstances. So we're open to discussions on how things might work.
Supervisor Hedens, I'll go back to you. Did you have any other questions?
I do. Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. And maybe you stated this at the beginning of it, and I just missed hearing you say it. So is this fund or your small business relief fund, is that, if you put money into it, does that money stay then in Story County, or is this fund... Is it for supporting small businesses in just central Iowa, or is it in the broader state, so it's the entire state?
The fund is set up so that it receives applications statewide.
Okay, okay. But so funds that we put in, that's what I'm trying to figure out. So if Story County decides to put funds in, do those funds stay in Story County, or is that part of the larger pot for people who apply that could go out throughout the state?
Well, we the donors or the contributors have the flexibility to place a geographic restriction on the use of their funds if they want to. So if, say, like Story County would want to restrict the use of the funds for Story County businesses, we could do that. The funds that we've received from the for the fund currently are primarily from financial institutions that have contributed to it, as well as some CBG. I think the Des Moines City Council recently has involved our folks in with the Des Moines partnership group there. But most of our funds to date have come from financial institutions and their foundation.
So then I have just two other questions. So then are you looking out or visiting with other counties as well to potentially participate in this program?
Well, actually, Dustin was the one that called me, so and we're willing to work with the Ames Chamber. ICC, as it turns out, it also has an equity fund, and we're a member of the Ames Seed Capital Fund. So we do have some investments in Story County and
sure,
and so forth, but I personally am not actively marketing this program to counties, but if there's interest in Story County, it seems to me that this might be something that we would want to share with other counties as a possibility to create a larger pot of funds that could be utilized in Mid-Iowa in particular, because there used to be a council of governments that historically in Mid-Iowa, but there isn't these days. That would be one that could be a possibility perhaps in this emergency circumstance.
Sure. And then my final question is on these grants. Is this, would it be for a one-time grant to a small business, or could they apply a second time if need be, and could they be awarded a second time, or so if they met certain criteria?
That's a possibility at this point. I'm not sure that the Alliance has discussed and developed a response to that issue. Our initial focus was to set something up, and we're just in the beginning stages of in funding our first tranche yesterday, and we'll have other tranches that we're in the process of evaluating applications this next few weeks.
So, okay, thank you very much for your response and your presentation.
Any other questions? Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is a tranche or tranche, or maybe I
should. A tranche, that's just a group.
How many in the group?
A group of applications.
How many? How many people the group of for the tranche?
I would say we've had one tranche and about 60 applications.
Okay, so out of that 500, your first round since April, you've now released funds to about 60 entities, correct?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So all the applicants are successful?
No.
So 60 applicants or 60? 60.
I've reviewed 60, I've been party to, let's put it this way, we had six people who reviewed 60 applications at this point. And so they were divided into two groups, and so three people reviewed half of each of the 60.
Okay, but our follow-up question, and I'm sorry, is how many checks did you send out to how many businesses from this
person? Let's see. At this point, I think they're about 50%.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions. Everybody, questions? I've got an answer, it looks like.
It has. If it's okay with the other two board members, I would maybe like to pursue some more information on this after I listen to the audio so that we can kind of clear up if everybody's on the same wavelength about business versus personal assistance. And if it's okay with the other two, I'd like to maybe call Dr. Edelman to ask more questions later if I think that maybe something needs should come back to the board.
I don't think we need anybody's permission.
Well, I just want to make it clear that what I'd like to do in the pursuit of that.
Sure.
Okay.
Thanks. And Linda, if I could make a few more comments here, just following up on a few things that Dr. Edelman said.
Yes, please.
So, Dr. Edelman, you mentioned, you know, the recovery period that we're going to go through, potentially through even five or more years. And I just want to say, in terms of the work that we've done with our businesses, there's this massive mobilization right now of resources, and many of those resources are in the form of loans, right? And so what I'm hearing, especially from small businesses, is that they're a bit reluctant to look at loans right now after this massive period of resource mobilization. They are more interested in grants, at least in the near term. Now, in terms of revolving loan funds that assist for businesses, some of our utility providers have those in our rural communities. And there are also things like the Mid-Iowa Development Fund that has a revolving loan fund that was established, I believe, in 1993 by the EDA, actually, after the flood. And so, you know, as we go ahead here, there may be a very long period of time where those loans are being accessed more and more, depending on the interest rate, of course. But right now, it seems like there's a real interest for grants, and just given the amount of loans that people have taken out to keep their businesses afloat. A couple of other things, too. You know, say the board, and of course you may decide against this, but say you decide to create a fund within the Small Business Relief Program, our office, as I see it, will be helping distribute information about that to our communities so that they do receive applicants from Story County. And I think you follow, you know, the rationale that I have in terms of bringing this forward to you, which is, number one, there's a pretty major administrative burden that goes along with creating a new program, as you know, because you've done this so many times, right? So there's staff hours and that kind of thing, too. But there's a piece of this that needs to be a bit responsive, given we are in an emergency situation. And so my hope would be that, you know, if you did create a fund, that would be able to be responsive to a need as they emerge, kind of in the moment. And then secondly, this is a separate group from you that would be making these decisions. And I think that's advantageous from the perspective that it's not you that's, you know, choosing the winners and losers here, who receives and does not receive a grant. So there's a bit of a buffer between the county government and the communities and businesses in those communities. And then finally, and I'll answer any questions by any of those points I've addressed, but finally, you know, we've created a survey instrument. And I guess I have a question for the three of you about what you'd like to do with that survey instrument as we explore this new program. You know, I certainly don't want to give the businesses the impression, you know, the ones that complete the survey, the impression that there is a program forthcoming, or if this is indicative of anything that's to come. So I can hold back on distributing that if you wish as you explore this, or we can go forward. I would just ask for a little bit of guidance on that. So thank you so much. I'll take any questions as well.
This is Linda. Let me just say something. I think you made some really good points about sending a survey out when we don't know the direction that we're going in here. So I can understand why you're suggesting that. I really do like, I think maybe the supervisors need to have a little more discussion on direction. But I'll let Supervisor Head and Supervisor Olson respond.
I'll let Lisa go first.
Did I hear Laura say for me to go first?
Yes, yeah, please. Yeah, sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah, yeah, no, that's fine. I kind of go back and forth on that, quite honestly, Justin, because I think in some respects we'd like to know the impact that is affecting businesses throughout the county. And for me, it would be nice to have some of that information, but I would certainly want it clearly stated that we're something in respect, and we have to probably figure it out, or in discussion with you, of there isn't any specific program. We're wanting some information so we can figure out what or if there is anything at the county level we can do, because we don't know if there is any potential money out there. So that's where I get exactly what. While you're asking the question, is you don't want to give that impression, but at the same time, you're not quite sure what we want to do unless we have some information.
Okay. So this is Supervisor Olson. This board needs to be more definitive about a game plan here. So Dustin, with your question, quite frankly, about don't want to give them the wrong idea, you sent those questions to me. I provided a couple of more questions I thought should be included. I thought the survey was out already. So I'm a little disturbed about that. The next thing is that nowhere in those questions is there any indication that the county is going to give anybody any money. And to hold back on this survey till we wait to, if we decide two out of three that it may be interpreted one way or another way, is not doing the people who need immediate help any good. And so you can hear the frustration in my voice, because my opinion is that it's not going to kill us to get those answers. And if anybody does think help is on the way, it's a very clear answer. We don't know yet. And then it does allow us to address the thing I've already brought up. I did not interpret a conversation about one type of assistance to then have stretched broadly across the board. And so we do need to have more discussion about whether there will be programs and aid available. We've been asked by several people. But we can't have that discussion, I feel, until we've got some feedback from our governments and from our local businesses about what their situation is. Knowledge is good. Knowledge is power from the standpoint of making good, effective decisions, whether we do anything or not. So my request as one of three is to go ahead and get that survey out.
This is Lisa, and I personally, I don't have a problem with the survey going out either, as long as it is that they are not under an impression that, oh, I'm going to fill out this survey and there's something immediate coming to them, because we don't know yet. And if I didn't articulate that as clearly earlier, that was what I was trying to say.
Okay, so do you want a phrase on that survey that says, we're just gathering information? No programs are proposed.
I think that might be clear to them. So we're just trying to gather some information because we don't have a program to propose at this particular time.
Okay.
No program.
So that would.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Dustin, can you do that?
Yeah, and that's very easy for me to communicate. Just wanted to make sure that, in light of this new information that we have, that nothing was changing on the front of the survey. And certainly we can make that clear and distribute that very, very soon. So thank you.
And one question that I have that I think is the answer is, if we were at some point to put some money, invest some money inside of a small business relief fund, and were to designate it solely for Story County businesses, that if it all did not get used, that remaining money would come back to Story County. And I guess knowing that, I thought maybe having a survey of to kind of get the sense of what the extent of the need was wasn't as important, because one of the reasons to do that is to say how much money, you know, could be used. So I guess I thought that, but I have no problems. As long as we're making it clear that this is, we have not established a program and this is just for information only, I'm fine with the circuit going out. Is that what you needed from us, Dustin?
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think the three of you for that that guidance. Thank you.
Okay, well, I thank you, Dustin, and Dr. Ellen, thank you for your time. We really appreciate the work you're doing on this issue, and I'm sure that we will be in touch for more information.
Thank you.
Okay, then we will move on to item 8, updates on COVID-19. Are there any updates that staff wish to give at this time? Hearing none, any updates from the supervisors? I see there are new numbers out, and Supervisor Hedden, do you usually report on those?
Yes, there were 374 new cases and 18 deaths.
That's statewide numbers.
Those are statewide, yes. We don't have the more local numbers yet. Don't usually come out till 11 or a little after.
Okay. Any other updates from the supervisors on COVID-19?
No, just to remark that the Joe VI, I think Todd, and then representatives from different departments like the Sheriff's Department will be on a courthouse security call at 1 o'clock today. And I was able to communicate with Les White. It turned out there was a little miscommunication, but we got it fixed. And Les White is going to call into that meeting also, Lisa, at 1 o'clock, meeting ISAC request that we have a public health official on it.
Oh, good.
That's it for me.
Okay, anything else? Okay, then we'll go on to update of COVID-19 impact on secondary roads fund, Darren Moon. And there is an attachment and lots of information on the attached to the agenda. And Darren, are you on call?
Yes, I am.
Okay, would you lead us through this and explain it? Where you think
sure.
Go?
Yeah, I mainly just wanted to give you an overall update on our budget situation. We have a bit of a unique funding situation for secondary roads. In general, about 60% of our funding comes from the road use tax fund, and then the other 40% comes from local property tax revenues. I'm not going to touch much on the 40% local property tax revenues today. I don't have a good prediction on that. I hope they're not impacted too much, but the board probably knows about as much as I do on that topic. The 60% road use tax fund, there's a lot of concern about that now, mainly because people are not driving as much. I'll get into a little bit later where all that money comes from, but a decrease in fuel sales is not a good thing, or vehicle sales. Moving on to the handouts I gave you, if you have those available, the first sheet kind of shows you FY19, FY20, our revenue income by month. The FY20 only goes up to April at this point. The May 1 should come out early next week, and everybody's saying that will be the first one that will start showing the impact of the less travel. Those incomes generally lag about 2 to 3 months behind, so that's why people are saying that May will start showing the impact. The good thing for FY20 is you can see the total, we're already up to $3.98 million received. Our estimate for the year was $4.13 million, so we only needed an additional $150,000 more to get what we had budgeted, and we had two more payments to come. So I don't see any issues on meeting the FY20 budget amount. So FY20 is not a concern for us. The concern is going to be in FY21 moving forward. So moving down to the second sheet, that's kind of a complicated involved spreadsheet, but I just wanted to point out revenues for road use tax for Story County is circled in yellow towards the bottom. That center number is what I mentioned, what we estimated coming in, and that FY20 is $4.1 million for road use tax. But there's an additional impact over to the right. That is our farm-to-market allocation, that $1.184 million. That's a fund the board doesn't see that much because it's handled through the state. It doesn't go through a local budgeting process. So that gets impacted just as much as the road use tax fund for a secondary road fund. But that money can only be spent on the farm market system on construction projects. So there's two impacts there I just wanted to make you aware of. Now, the next sheet kind of gets into what we think that impact might be. This shows some traffic volumes. The DOT has, I believe, about 120 counters out there getting real-time counts on the roads. So that graph shows you, it breaks down secondary roads, highways, interstates. The top green line is the secondary roads, vehicle miles traveled. And the dark line at the top, the straight line, is kind of the 0%. That's the average it usually is. So you can see the big drop. A lot of that's down 30 to 40% drop in vehicle mile travel. The other concern of this graph, not only is it showing vehicles are less, but it's not. This graph is not taking into account that those trips might be a lot shorter than they used to be. So it could actually be worse than what this graph is actually showing, because people are probably traveling a lot less distance. But so keep that in mind. So I think the DOT showed a period where there was about a 44% decrease in vehicle miles traveled. But the general consensus is, averaging this all out, we're talking about a 25% reduction for these few months, and we just don't know how long that's going to continue. It's starting to work its way up a little bit, so that's a good sign. But the general consensus is a possible 25% impact on the fuel tax portion of this. Now, going down to the next sheet, it kind of shows a chart that DOT made up for the overall budget of the road use tax fund. You can see there's $1.29 billion that comes into the transportation fund system. The green tank over in the left middle, that's the road use tax fund. And what I wanted to point out with that is, if we go down to the next sheet, I blew up that a little bit and circled two things in yellow. The one on the top shows the three main sources that come into the road use tax fund that affect the secondary roads. The top one is the registration fees. That's $626 million. That's not the new registration on vehicles. That's the one you pay every year. We don't see that one getting impacted as much as the other two below it. The second one is the fuel taxes. That's the biggest one. It's about 39% of our fuel tax budget. That is the fuel sold at the pump, so that's one we see getting reduced due to the lower vehicle miles travel. The third one is the fees for new registrations, so that's new vehicle sales, so we also see that one getting impacted as well. So at this point, it's a bit of a guessing game yet, but what we're estimating is a 25% reduction. If we see that last throughout an entire year, you know, we could be looking at $1 million to $1.5 million shortfall from what we had originally budgeted. I guess the good news, if there is any, is we're in a probably better situation than most counties. We have a decent carryover balance that we'll be able to absorb that for a while. One other source of funding I didn't mention yet was the local option sales tax. Our department receives about $250,000 of that per year, and that goes to our motor grader payment. That fund is also going to see some impact. We do not know yet what that will be. other counties, it's a much more serious situation. I think Woodbury County commented they get $2 to $3 million from that local option sales tax. So they're not only going to get impacted by that, but they use that to make up their 75% local effort. And so if they come up short there, they're going to also use road use tax on the top of that. So we're not quite in that situation, but there's going to be other counties that the local option is going to impact them a lot more than us.
So, Karen?
Yes.
Can I ask just a quick question on something else? Were you on the phone for Dr. Edelman's presentation?
Yes.
Did you hear him talk about 5 years as a recovery?
Yes, but we don't know if that'll be the traffic impact. I could see the budget impact and finances, but I don't. The one good thing is fuel prices are way low right now, so typically that means more gas is sold, and it's we get per gallon. It's not per dollar; it's per gallon. So the more gallons sold is good for us. So low prices usually mean more gallons sold. So we hope there's a quick recovery in there. It's just. The traveling, people may not travel as much. That's a big concern.
Okay, and I'm sorry I interrupted, but I just wanted to ask that question while I was thinking of it. Please go on.
Sure. Those are the main things with the budget. I wanted to point out, one, we've got some carryover balance, and two, we budgeted quite a bit more next year in our ROC budget, which is something that could be cut back. We usually budget around $900,000, and then we bump that up to $1.7 million because of the bad spring we had last year. We have put a lot of rock out there already this year, so that's the item I'd be looking at probably first to cut back on since we increased it so much for next year. So we do have a little leeway there. The only other thing I wanted to point out was possible legislation that might backfill some of these lost revenues. We unfortunately at this point haven't gotten much guidance on the funding. We've sent letters, the County Engineers Association has sent letters to all of our congressional leaders making them aware of this been a possible shortfall. And at this point, the CARES Act and everything, the formulas indicate that's going to be kind of spread out the CDBG formula. That's usually not a good thing for counties that tend to go more towards cities. So we've expressed our concern with that formula. And there's been not much guidance on how we even apply for that stuff at this point. So we're still waiting for guidance on that. But we're hoping for some possible backfill through legislative action. Questions about any of that? I covered quite a bit there quickly.
Darren, back to if the revenue projections work out like you're anticipating or the reductions, do you have a thoughts about which projects we might not be picking up in the fiscal year 21?
In fiscal year 21, I think we're good through. We also have, I didn't really touch base on that, a lot of our projects in 21 are using the Farm Market Fund for construction, and we do have a balance in that as well. It's pretty healthy, so we've been saving up some of that money. So I don't think we'll see construction get impacted too much in the next year or two. Maybe on the local budget side, but those projects have pretty well been set in motion already, and so I think we'll be able to cover the 21 stuff. I think we're probably looking further out, 22 and 23, so we'll probably start looking at the cutbacks if we need to.
Thank you.
And so are there things in 21, if revenues do go really bad, that you are looking at? I mean, I'm not going to ask you right now, but do you have a list of things that you could cut back? I heard you've got leeway in the ROC budget, just a yes or no. Do you have some other things if we just really end up with the economy not picking up?
Yeah, there's other things, but I just don't think we'll get to that point between the ROC and our carryover balance. It'd have to be really drastic to go any further than that. So I think we'll have time by our next budget session this fall to really discuss how the future could impact us. But I don't think we'll have to go any further than that for the next year or so.
For the year or so. But if we're looking at a long range, it just depends on how much things we don't know right now. Okay, thanks. Supervisor Heddens, I'm sorry. Do you have questions?
I do not. My question got answered already. Thank you.
I just thinking in my mind the other impacts. I didn't even touch on that we get a considerable amount of federal aid, not really federal aid, it's just federal funding that comes to our county through formulas similar to the road use tax. That's based off of federal fuel tax, so that will get hit as well. So our federal aid projects in the future may be impacted as well. So just keep that in mind. That's all construction side of things.
Okay. Any other questions for Darren?
No.
Mm-hmm. I'm certainly glad with that last slide that we were able to hone in on a few things rather than understanding that entire slide. I think an engineer put that together.
Yeah, that's pretty busy.
Yeah, I thought there's a quiz on this. I don't think I'm going to make it, but it's very interesting. It's very interesting. It does show how complex of funding that you're dealing with. So thank you for that. Please do, when you feel like you have an update that would be useful to us, please schedule yourself in for another one. I found this very useful. And we did so much that the reminders are good as well. So.
Yeah, like I said, I think early next week we'll get the April numbers and we'll see, get a real start to what that impact might be.
Okay, that would be good. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
We'll go on to an update on the fiscal impact of conservation due to COVID-19. Mike Cox, are you on the phone?
I am.
Yours is a simpler document.
Much.
Would you explain to us nevertheless?
Yeah, you bet. Nowhere near the level of complexity as the engineers. But just in a brief nutshell here, obviously with the impacts of this on our operation, we've had impacts on both sides of the budget, expenses and revenue, and that's reflected in this spreadsheet. As you see, general overall operating expenses for conservation are down, or total expenses, I should say, down about $180,000 this year on the expense side. Revenue overall is down about $24,000. So majority of that down revenue is $46,000 in camping lost fees, or lost opportunity, I should say, there. Expected that might come down a little bit more with the lake renovation process at Hickory Grove that was unplanned. So with the lake down, we might have less income at Hickory this year than what we planned as well. The reason that the revenue is there, and again, these are just snapshots of items either exclusively or largely related to COVID in this worksheet. But the reason that the overall revenue is down less than the camping revenue is that we've received an uptick in donations as well. So that's helped balance that out. As far as our roadside program, it's a wash there, about the same amount of down revenue and down expenses. So I guess with that, I'd take any questions on it.
Supervisor Hedges, I think I'll start with, I should turn to start first with questions.
I guess kind of going along what we had at with the engineer. So are you saying that some of your projects would not be impacted for this upcoming fiscal year 21, but potentially further out, that they may be? You say in your notation here it's kind of unknown on your impact on grants and stuff. So
correct. I do expect that there will be an impact there. We just don't know how much at this point. So I tend to think because of the lead time in getting projects queued and ready to go, grants are generally received several years prior to actual construction, so, or utilization of that grant. So yes, you're absolutely right that we may see impacts or slowed initiatives, if you will, in the future that we would look to grant funding for if that money is not available. So yes.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Mike.
Yep.
Anything else? Supervisor Olson?
No, I did not have another question.
Supervisor Olson, then?
If we could get a really quick rundown on, I understand now Hickory Grove Campground is going to be open. So I was just kind of wondering about the logistics involved there, if it's going to be filled or not. I know there's some restrictions on who can and can't. So can you kind of quickly run that for us, Mike?
Ask a couple questions about the expenses?
You can,
okay,
yes.
Thank you. Under conservation, I just want to make sure I understand your numbers here. The $73,700 is operating expenses down, and then the total expenses, I assume, includes salaries, and you're $181,000 down there. Correct.
Total expenses includes capital. It includes capital and operating.
Capital is in there, okay.
Yeah. So that's the good thing. And part of that being down is capital projects that we may need to move forward to 21.
Okay, so it's probably capital's not, you've not been having any significant salary savings, correct?
Correct.
Okay. That was what I wanted to know, what was in the total expenses and why there was that much. What is your total budget, Mike?
Let me look at that. I've got it pulled up here. Let's see. For this FY, we had a revenue budget of $1.5 million. And on the expense side, bear with me a second, my connection is slow.
Okay.
And that's the conservation budget.
Yeah, and when you say with conservation, that's fine. Just wanted to get an idea of what you were looking at.
On the expense side, we have, and this includes capital, we have a FY20 expense budget of $5.4 million.
And the grants are basically construction projects and land acquisition. And you don't have any personnel on grants at this point, do you?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Those were all the questions that I had that came to mind right now. So thank you. Now let's go back to Supervisor Olson's question. Pardon me. And I think that might actually also lead into your next
I'd be happy to answer it under either location. I was planning to get into a little bit of that on the next slide.
Don't let me take away your thunder. Go on, Mike, okay? For the next
slide. Whatever your preference. So.
That's good. Let's go on.
So that's all I had on this one.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the update. So heading on then, we have a contract between Joseph Fullerton and Story County Conservation Board for campground attendance duties. So there's a change on the contract, which you can explain, but maybe explain it in the larger context of what you're doing with the campground. And then
you bet.
Okay,
that's perfect. Obviously, this impact pandemic has had a big impact on our camping and on all outdoor recreation, I should say. Most outdoor recreation, I'm going to say, is probably up, at least for the casual use. Our park park use has been incredible. We've had more park use this spring than we've probably ever had in my tenure here, which is not insignificant. So lots of people out on the trails, lots of people out just utilizing the parks, whether it be fishing or just hiking or birding, whatever it may be, lots of people are out. Which is all great because we're receiving, you know, some of our parks that get very little use are now getting more. So that's been wonderful. As it relates to the campground, of course, we did close the campground earlier, and the governor then issued a proclamation to close campgrounds. The governor relaxed that proclamation, allowed campgrounds to open back up on the 8th of May. We are keeping ours closed until the 22nd of May in order to do some preparation and frankly to just see how the situation evolves a little bit. Keep our guests as safe as possible and our staff as safe as possible. So on the 22nd, we will open under a restricted level of camping. And that camping will be RV only, or I should say self-contained only. Restrooms will not be open. Shower facilities will not be open. We will have all of our normal 14-day limitations in place. There will be restrictions on how many people. Campers will not be able to have outside guests and be limited then to, of course, no more than 10 people in a campsite. Playgrounds will remain closed and shelters, et cetera, will remain closed as well. Really think that this, but yet at the same time, for those that wish to get outside and to utilize, do some camping and do have some self-contained units, then we encourage them to then go ahead and get out if they so choose. We were having no personal contact between our host, which is this action item, a contract with our campground host. No personal contact between the host and the campers. The host will facilitate his or her duties without having that personal contact, but will still be there to be our eyes and ears, and still be there to facilitate the sale of firewood and the other such duties. So back to specifically, I guess, this host contract. We have been for the last several years splitting the season into two halves and having a separate host for each campground for each half of the season. This year, our host would normally start the 1st of April. Obviously, that did not happen, so we put them on hold. Our host at Hickory Grove then decided that that person did not want to come for the remainder of their second season, their contract, which was the first half of the season. And the person that would be serving as the host for the second half at Hickory Grove was willing to come forward and pick up the remainder of the first half as well, beginning on the 20th of May, which gets them there a couple days ahead of our opening. So we do anticipate, even though the lake at Hickory Grove will be drawn down, we do anticipate still a heavy demand for camping at Hickory Grove. Hickory Grove, another thing that we're taking into consideration is spacing of campsites at Hickory Grove and at the new campground at Dakin's Lake. They're all spaced fairly wide, so there's quite a bit of distance between the campsites. The original, I should say, what we're referring to now is the primitive sites at Dakin's Lake. they are very close together. And on those sites, in this level one restricted camping, we're going to be alternating those sites. So we will have every other one closed, not reservable, not usable, in order to maintain some distancing between camping groups. We have been offering refunds for camping due to COVID-19, and we'll continue to do that through the end of May. Camping beyond that, if someone wants a refund, then we're really not going to be offering refunds. However, with the lake being down now, lots of people did do refunds, did do camping reservations at Hickory with the idea that we're going to have a lake full. And that being the case, we'll have to consider doing refunds. We will have to consider doing refunds for that cause, but not for COVID. So are there any other questions, I guess, on our situation with camping and conservation facilities?
Start with Supervisor Olson. Do you have any questions?
I have none. Thanks for the recap. I appreciate it.
Supervisor Hedden, do you have any questions?
My only question is, Mike, do you have an anticipation how long it's going to take with the draining of the lake again and to get all the carp out? How long that may be unusable? Or is it too early to predict that?
Well, our plan is for this full season. I hate to say that, but that's what it's going to take. It's in the process of being drawn down right now, and we're anticipating then bringing it back up in the roughly a year from now. So 1 year from now, it should be at full lake level.
Okay, thank you.
It will be the full season, unfortunately.
Okay. Yeah, that is too bad, but thank you.
Yep.
Okay, I don't have questions, but I just do have one comment that I have to say. I noticed that the actual contract with Joe, he signed on March 1st, then Christine signed for the board on April 17th, and the change from the 15 to 24 weeks is written in Wednesday, May 20th, but it's not been initialed. So I would not... And I also noticed there's a place for me to sign these contracts. I'm not willing to sign them until everybody who signed the contract has initialed the change. Because if the change is not initialed and it's got a later date on it, somebody, and I don't know why they would, but just as somebody could come back later and say, I didn't see that. So I don't think I have to hold anything up, but I just wanted to let you know that I would ask you to get the change, the handwritten change initialed by the other people who signed it before now, and then I signed the contract. So
we'll do that.
I could, if there's going to be somebody, I can drop them all off to you this afternoon if somebody's going to be at the conservation office.
Yes, they are there.
Okay, I'll drop the contract off then. I would entertain a motion for approval of the contract between Joseph Fullerton and the Stewart County Conservation Board for the campground units, changing the initial date to May 20th. Beginning date.
This is Lisa, so moved.
Okay, I'm going to enter the friendly amendment dependent upon the parties initialing where appropriate. Then I'd second that. Because I think it is important. If we don't have initials on it, I agree with Supervisor Merkin, you know, as far as there could be a little legal issue.
Well, I'm not going to sign it until there's initials on it, so it's not final until it's signed. But if you want to do the amendment.
Yeah, fine. For the instruction, so everybody understands what's happening.
Supervisor Hedden, do you accept the friendly amendment?
I do.
Okay.
Okay, then we can just vote on the vote motion is amended. I don't think we have to vote on the amendment.
Right.
Okay. Hedden.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye. Okay, and as I said, I will drop the paperwork that needs to be redone off to your office this afternoon. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for all the information on what the Conservation Board has approved to moving forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Next, discussion and consideration of letter of support for the LCAN grant application. Sandra, can I can also give some information, but I'll let Sandra start out.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, good morning.
Letter before the board today is a letter in support of SPAN, and that is Story County College Access Network. It's designed to bring together representatives from various sectors of the community, government, education, philanthropy, nonprofits, businesses, et cetera, to help prepare individuals for their education and careers. And Story County is one member of that group, along with ISU, FERC, United Way, Ames Chamber, and many others. And the idea is to leverage community resources in ways that support access and success are removing barriers to creating opportunities. And it's based on collective impact philosophy, part of that intake from village mindset. A particular focus here is to benefit from this approach those who are historically underrepresented, low-income students, students of color, first-generation college-born students. And as someone who's personally had experience as a low-income first-generation student of color, I know what difference in people's lives a prospect or a partnership like this can make. So the letter was developed in support of SCAN's grant, SCAN's LCAN grant, year two, to continue this work, and it was meant so that the county just expressed its commitment to support and partner in these community efforts.
Are there questions? Supervisor Heddens, I think it's your turn to start. I'm trying to alternate.
Yep.
I think I'm right.
No, you know, I think the letter looks fine. I think the one question is, with these minor changes, should it say, like, we are excited, or is I okay? That would just be my only question. Since it's we, the board.
So the beginning paragraph said, we are excited to offer a letter of support.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, and then it says, we are pleased for the county to have a role. It would be the second sentence in that same first paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the only two where I saw the I.
Is there anything else? And it says, we are pleased in the last paragraph, so that makes sense.
Right.
Okay.
Just as it's throughout, right.
My only is drop the middle initial of the word. Don't use it. And Sandra, I want to thank you, Al, for putting this together. I appreciated you being willing to do that. It's a great letter. Supervisor Olson, did you have any other edits that you wanted?
Sure. I appreciate receiving the explanation of what this group is focused on. I know that Supervisor Merkin kind of mentioned to, I think, both of us, Supervisor Heddens and I, months ago, or you might have even come on earlier than that, you were asked to sit on this group.
It was in November or December. It was late last year.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay. Well, time flies when you're having fun or not. Okay. But I never quite knew what the group was focused on. Okay. So I appreciate hearing about that. So what has historically happened with the majority of letters of support that the counties issued, the paragraphs talk about what the group does, again, in relationship to the county. So maybe saying, you know, maybe cutting out a little bit about the COVID-19 situation, instead talking about that, you know, we are a education-rich county, with both, you know, college and university opportunities, and we need, we have a diverse population, so we really need support in removing barriers and increased opportunities for all. So that is just where I would kind of just change the emphasis there. that's in keeping it with how most previous letters have been issued. And you wouldn't know that because it's not like we've done a whole lot of letters of support in the last 6 months. Then my only other question is down in the next to the last paragraph, which I guess is the third paragraph. We welcome the opportunity to participate in impactful ways, okay, including with in-kind support, which I think is okay, but there's also an implication about doing more if we can. I'm a little nervous about saying, but we will if we can. And maybe what we would like to say, it is too early to know if we will be able to do more, period.
Maybe just take that out.
Well, you can take the whole sentence out, but I was just going to cut out, but we will if we can. That's the kind of nervousness thing that people come back. Okay? So that's it for me. You know, and there's nothing wrong with the language, and it's very well written about the COVID and needing to come together. It's just usually we throw something in about how mentioning how some of that work or that mission reverts back to the citizens of the county specifically.
And Sandra, let me ask, is the deadline for this letter today?
If we did, it's
a 30th. So you would have some time to do a little bit. Do those revisions, and is it okay then to leave it back?
They asked for it today, but I think their deadline has actually been extended anyway. But I think
okay. So maybe you can do a quick revision.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll sign it then later today.
Okay, super.
You can do that. I appreciate it. And I would also say, I'm glad that we're supporting this because I love what Sandra said. There are lots of students who don't get the opportunity, who don't get the connections made to go on to higher education, and I know it also made a big difference in my life. And I think a lot of us are people who, you know, we're the first from our family, or you know, our parents didn't go to college, and I just see what I really like about this is that this group. And first, I'm going to say this. I was really excited about being on this group, and I was really hoping to participate in a lot of meetings, and this group meets on Friday mornings.
Ouch.
And I also had asked Sandra to come with because I knew she had a lot of background from her previous employment in this area and could be helpful, and she's here Friday morning. So we have not been, as the county, as actively participating as I'd like to, and I've been meeting Nicole Lee. In fact, that's why we're a little late on the letter, because usually what we're sending out is an invitation to a meeting I can't make. So I haven't been, and then Sandra said, hey, we called, and we're at letter of support, and oh my gosh. So please apologize to her for me. I'm hoping that as things return to normal, we can get back into this group. They're really doing a data approach, looking at the data from all of the schools in the county. So I think it is really important that Story County continue to be involved, and hopefully we can circle back with them and pick up where we left off and do more. So, okay.
Yeah, and I did update her on after the activation of the COOP cost that kind of sucked up some time that we weren't anticipating. So I did let her know that we were in disaster planning.
I appreciate good. I appreciate that you covered for us. Thank you very much.
So
you'll be redoing this.
Okay, super. Yeah, just those are my suggestions on that. Okay. So I make the motion that we approve this letter of support with some of the language changed as discussed, but it does not need to come back to the board for approval first. Supervisor Merkin will read it as chair and sign it as she goes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Thank you. Sandra, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I'm not too worried with you guys. You're missing a few meetings, but it's kind of a long-term goal, right? So,
mm-hmm.
Anyhow.
And we'll talk at some point about whether we're, you know, how long we're going to continue Friday meetings, too, but if we decide we're going to, we'll figure something out. This was the time of Friday at 11 o'clock was the time that worked well for just about everybody else on the group, and all of a sudden it didn't work for us at all. But, okay, super.
Let's go on. Item 14, discussion and consideration of establishing dates for all employees to return to the
Web-based tools.
Why did I cross that out? Maybe I thought we did. Okay. Barb, I'm sorry. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. And we have discussed it several times, so maybe that's why you skipped over it.
Oh, I think it's me and the font on the agendas. I skip over. I miss things, really. But Emma, I actually crossed off as if I had done it. So, Barb, take it away. Please tell us where
we are. Well, we are nowhere. We're still gathering information. I've been asked to come back, and Laura's had questions about pricing and costs and options. So, and really, I must admit, it is difficult to really put your finger on something definite with these because they are changing their plans almost daily due to the COVID experience and, you know, the plethora of people who are getting on board and trying to get on with support is really a nightmare. But I have reached out and talked to several sources, and Laura's just wanted a comparison between WebEx and Zoom, and I did prepare a little spreadsheet, but I apologize, I left off the business, Zoom business column, because we had already talked about that. That is not on the little mini spreadsheet that I did.
Did you
know
what the columns are? I just did it and I didn't know what was what. Maybe something got cut off.
No, not this one.
So on the Excel spreadsheet, well, I guess you wouldn't have gotten it in Excel. You would have gotten it in the scanned version. So we had a WebEx column, Zoom Pro, it should be Zoom Pro column, and then Zoom for Government. We pretty much, I don't think we need the Zoom Government. What that is very much more expensive, and that's what I was waiting for a call back from support on. You know, why is this so much more expensive? I would think Zoom for Government would be a little less costly. Apparently, this adds DoD security, and for our meetings, that is not something that we really need to have. So if you wanted to, and I apologize again, the Zoom business, that offers the same options as the Zoom Pro, which is the second column. But it does offer a 24-hour meeting duration, 300 guests, and $19.99 a month, but your minimum to pay is for 10, so it's actually $199 per month. And then they do offer, I think, Laura, you asked about the discount, so if you buy the whole year, mm-hmm. it's only $1,999 for the whole year, which is about $166 per month. So in a previous discussion, we did decide to go with the Zoom business. There was a question as to how we could pay for it. On the website, of course, if you ordered online, it's credit card only. However, I have reached out to one of our vendors, CDW, to see if they can get a Zoom package for us, and then they would send us an invoice, and they are working on that right now. So when you look at the cost, it does look like WebEx is a little less expensive. They do, for the free version, it is pretty limited. There's only a 40-minute limit on your meetings. And once the 40 minutes is over, you do get cut off, and there's a limit of 100 people participating. There is an option, Laura, you asked about buying extra.
Yes.
So according to the website, you can buy extra participants if you foresee that maybe a meeting will go over the 100 that's allowed. And the costs, I believe I emailed that to everyone this morning.
But Barb, this is Lisa. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you just said that the 40-person limit or the 40-meeting limit, isn't that under Zoom?
That's under the free WebEx version.
So that would be under free, the first one, because I don't see where it says 40 minutes under that one, because that's the free personal.
It says meet as long as you want, and then it says up to 40 minutes. And Zoom also has that same 40-minute limit, so they're both the same.
Okay, I must just not be seeing it, because I see meet as long as you want. I just don't see the 40 minutes. That's why I wanted to be talking about one and not looking at the wrong one. So that's why I'm not seeing. Thank you.
It's very fine. The font is a little lighter right under that. in parentheses, okay, it does say. It may not show up on your copy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So for our purposes, I'm not sure if the free versions would work. Did you have a question, Linda?
Well, I did, but I guess maybe we're past it. I see your spreadsheet, but there were, we had three pages of information before the spreadsheet to say free, starter, plus, business.
Yes, those are directly from the website, from WebEx and from Zoom.
Which is WebEx and which is Zoom? It doesn't say on what I looked at.
It may have been cut off on the snippet. So the one that starts off that says free, starter, plus, or business?
Yes.
That is from WebEx.
Okay.
And then the basic pro business and enterprise is from the Zoom website.
That helps. I had no idea what I was looking at there. And then there's another page that says FedGrant. What is FedGrant? Is that something we're not...
That is the federal government, yes. And so when I talked to my vendor this morning, I was like, well, why is this so much more expensive? Because when I was on Zoom chat, they directed me to this site. And so I went to the site, and I'm like, oh, that's way over what I thought it should be. But the difference is it offers Department of DOD security and encryption, and you don't have Zoom bombing. So that's what that's all about. And that's something, with the DOD compliance, I'm not sure if that's something that we need for the extra cost that's involved.
So let me go back to the Zoom business, now that I know what I'm looking at. The $19.99 per month is actually 10 times that. But you got to go
right, because
that.
That's the minimum, yes.
I understand that. And the WebEx does not have that restriction that you have to have 10 posts?
It does not say it. I haven't tried to check out with WebEx before because that's where you get hooked. Like when I tried to check out with Zoom just to see what I could do, that's when it, you know, told me 10 hosts. And when I tried to change the number, it was grayed out. I couldn't change it. With WebEx, I can check quickly to see if we have that option.
Well, I have to admit, I was a participant in a WebEx call last night. It did not go very well at all. And I've been in some other Zoom calls. And I felt like for people calling in or remoting in or whatever you would call it, get joining in, that from what I saw of WebEx from that experience, it was not nearly as user-friendly as Zoom is. And I don't know if anybody...
And that is true. That is one of the main complaints when you look at the blogs on all of these features. WebEx is criticized for not being able to set it up, and then the user experience is less than expected.
It was.
And there's a lot of freezing sometimes. It, you know, that could be the internet connection, so you can't really blame that on WebEx.
Well, I did this from home, which is why I'm making most of my Zoom, a lot of my Zoom calls. Never had the experience with Zoom of having low bandwidth and all come up and freezing up. Mm-hmm. And it happens all the time in the WebEx call.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So I was not impressed. It seemed like Zoom was more reliable from that point of somebody contacting him.
Right.
You have something?
Okay. Will you forget it? Okay. Yeah. So why I asked for this to come back was because when I voted, I was under the understanding that it would be $19.95 a month, and as Barb said, it was when she got to the end of the process, she found out we needed to have 10, basically, subscriptions. So all of a sudden it was $199 a month. So, and really, with the little looking I've done a couple weeks ago, I realized that there was only one incident that we were aware of right now, one upcoming meeting, where we were likely to exceed 100 participants. And the $19.95 gave us 300 participants every month. And the odds of us ever needing that would be very unique. So that's why I said, hey, I'd like to have this come back, and I'd like to look at apples-to-apples comparisons. Hopefully if we can find out, like, WebEx needs more money or, you know, needs a minimum number or whatever. So, Barb, I really appreciate with what you gave to us today, because now it shows that even for the Zoom option, if we stay at 100, that it's a much lower price. We've gone down to $899 from $1,900, basically $2,000. The only thing was, is what if we still need, we still are maybe going to need more people for the meeting that we'll have within the next 60 days about the CAFO. And so that's why I emailed Barb some questions this morning, just asking what we could find out if we wanted to just get, like, say, the Zoom subscription, okay, at the $800 and some, but then we asked to pay for one special meeting where we added additional participants. And Barb, it looks like you were able to get a little more information here on that. So that it looks like, if I understand what you emailed us this morning, that Zoom, though, will only do that on a monthly also, rather than just we could add 500 for one meeting for an extra 70.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it was a thought, but it, of course, it is more. You know? Okay. So I just want to really thank you for the work that you, the extra work you did to try and save us some money, and still being able to accommodate a large group on a very occasional basis.
So I got confused here.
Sure.
The large meeting add-on is not available with Zoom?
Only if we go the whole 12 months on it. That's the problem. Even though they kind of did that teaser on the website, oh, need more participants? It actually is not for just one meeting that we can kind of say,
right,
pay an extra fee. So then it does come back to, based upon what we originally asked Barb to find out, it's still, it's the Zoom with up to 300 participants if we want to accommodate one meeting. But we'll be paying for an extra 200 participants every month for the rest of the time that we probably won't need. The difference in cost then between the $19.99 minus the 800 and once again looking at 400 or whatever, is we're paying a significant amount of money, $1,100 just for that one meeting for the CAFO. Not saying that we don't need it, but
when you said we need to go the 12 months, did you mean we have to have it, we have to get it for every month for 12
yes.
months, or we need to just do the contract? Or the
no, we need to pay that extra fee for every month for 12 months. So
I'm not sure if we have to, Laura.
Oh, that was
I'm just
asking you.
Yep, it just says when you click on the little I for more information,
yeah,
it says you have the option to purchase up to 1,000 participants with our large meeting add-on. Basic plan is not eligible for large meetings, so that would mean
right,
it would have to be either the pro or the business. So then if you wanted to add 500 participants for the pro, it would cost an extra $64.99 per month per host, but it did not say if it's for the whole subscription. So I'm wondering if you went month to month, if this would apply. I mean, and that's a question I can put forth
yeah,
to support again. I've already got two emails out to them, but maybe CDW would have that answer for me because I've asked them for a quote as well.
Let me add on to that. So, you know, rather than, you know, we can have Barb come back for another meeting, but that's my only reservation about Zoom, whether we can do that for 1 month to accommodate a meeting. And what I'm looking at right now is the sign on our roll. It says maximum occupancy 75.
Right.
Right.
So when we have to think we're going to accommodate more, to have to accommodate more than 75 people, we move the meeting off-site. This would be like we're paying a little bit to move a meeting off-site for
right,
larger capacity.
Mm-hmm.
An occupancy rate, whichever
right,
way you want to call it. I would be comfortable, let me just say this, I would be comfortable going, and if it's pro we're talking about,
yes,
that's the eight and the number again,
The pro is on the spreadsheet. So the pro would be $14.99, and you have to get 5 licenses. So that would be, oh gosh, where's my calculator?
75.
$75
a month.
Yeah, about $75 a month. And then $8.99 a year.
Okay, so $8.99 a year.
Mm-hmm.
$8.99 a year plus $64.99 when we want to have a bigger meeting for a month.
Mm-hmm.
And we could have 30 meetings that month if we wanted to, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Not many, but I'm in favor of that. I would be, if you can get the answers to the questions that satisfy you, I would be willing to entertain a motion right now. Maybe we can just go ahead and do this.
Yeah.
And you only have to come back if that doesn't, if it turns out to be significantly higher than that.
I'm up for that.
This is Lisa. I just have a question, just a clarifying question.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So Barb, where it says the pricing month host and it's $14.99 a month for 5 months. And that you're multiplying that out, or for a year. Do for 5 licenses, and then for a year would be that $8.99.40.
Right.
So it is not. I just want to make sure that I'm clear and understand this. So like the next level up on that Zoom one, the business one, that was $19.99 a month. Was it plus $199 a month, or was it you had to have 10 licenses? And
you had to have 10, yep.
Okay. It's confusing on how
I know it is.
How's it on here?
Okay. And you don't really see that until you go to checkout. And then, like, I just clicked on the checkout, and it says 10 hosts, and it has a drop-down, and I'm like, well, I don't want 10 hosts, but you cannot go under 10 hosts. You can only go over. So that's their minimum that they allow for the business, and then it says the monthly cost would be $199.90.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it is a little confusing, and there are some gotchas, I'm sure, but you have to be really careful when you look at this stuff. And I don't know, people sometimes during a pandemic like this get in a hurry and sign up for something they really didn't want.
And I see it at the website too, and I found it both. I mean, I've used Zoom more very, very easily compared to WebEx, but both of them trying to look at their pricing has been very confusing.
Right. Yes, I agree. And it changes daily. Like I said, now WebEx used to be more expensive, and now today they dropped their prices by 50 cents. So I think there's a lot of competition going on, and you know, they want to be the leader in the industry. So I think until we make the actual purchase, the price could go down a little.
And would this purchase is a 12-month, are we committing ourselves to 12 months?
Mm-hmm.
To get that $8.99, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So let me try to summarize and move us on then. What we then are discussing here is to purchase Zoom on 12-month contract.
Pro,
thank you. Zoom Pro for $8.99 a year with the option that we, as we understand it, of being able to get an extra capacity for any month, 500 extra participants at $64.99 for that month. Now, is that $64.99 per month per host? I mean, it's $64.99 times 5? Did we have to get 5 hosts? No, it's not. This doesn't have the host thing with it, right?
Right. Well, it does, but there's 5.
Okay, well it says $64.99 per month per host.
Right.
Purchasing it for one host?
I don't think you can.
That's if you purchase extra. I think you're looking at my email.
Yeah,
I am.
So that
that was for extra.
Basically $350 more for that month.
Yeah, it's not just $64.99. It's $64.99 times 5 for that month.
True. Yes, exactly. If you want 500 extra participants, and that's the lowest bucket they give you.
Okay.
This is Lisa again. Are we clear that is you can only do it for that one month?
It's a little ambiguous on his website, but yes, that is what I am led to believe by looking at it.
My one question. Whatever potential motion might be coming forth is, would we be tying ourselves into if we wanted to do one meeting with a larger amount for that add-on, is that tying us into beyond 1 month?
I think Mark already asked that question. But the other question is it $64.99 or $64.99 times 5? And Alyssa just came to the microphone, so let me see.
To simplify this, is it possible for Zoom Pro, and so it doesn't, as long as it is less than the Zoom Business Plan, but it's looking at, if you have to pay for that, is there a way the board to approve Zoom and we'll go with the less expensive option? We need to move forward with this,
yeah.
And every time we, you know, so if Zoom is what the board wants, I make a motion to look into it, whatever, like you said.
And it should authorize you to
yep.
do it.
I would appreciate that, yes.
I agree on that. Yeah.
I would entertain a motion that we ask the IT director to purchase Zoom for us. And for her to decide the level of the package based on her further research.
With our, and our meeting, our needs is, we're going to know, we know we have at least one meeting that will require 300 people, but then we'd like to keep it
economical
if we can.
Okay, so if somebody wants to make a motion.
I think it's mine. I'm not sure. I'll make it. Okay. I move that we approve for the IT director to go with a Zoom package upon further research that yields the most economical plan that still meets our needs, knowing we will have at least one meeting in the next 12 months that will require more than 100 participants.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Not. Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Okay, great. Barb and Alyssa, thank you for all the work on this. And Barb, thank you for the additional work that you will be doing. I think we're getting there. Your comment about what's out there on the internet and during this time, you know, we always hear about internet fraud. There's sometimes just misleading out there. I thank you for looking into this as deeply as you are.
So, ma'am.
Thank you, Board.
We're going to take a 5-minute recess, if that's okay, before we get into the next agenda item.
Sure.
Okay. Okay, we are back from our recess. Supervisor, haven't you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. Couldn't see you, just wanted to make sure. Okay.
Yep.
We are now on to item 14, discussion and consideration of establishing dates for all employees to return to the workplace and for county buildings to be open to the public. As I think you've all noticed, obviously the governor's proclamations. Also, I know the city of Ames has been discussing this issue, and our other communities in the county have been talking about when they are opening their city halls to the public, when they're opening libraries, and talking about swimming pools and those kind of issues. And I think the Trib did a good article on, and I think probably all the supervisors, some of us listened in to what they did Tuesday night?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Tuesday night. Okay.
So long story short, we've said we have some benchmarks we're looking at to determine when we will be doing phase reopening. I think, honestly, we're already in the process of a lot of that right now, and the facilities management has been doing a lot, and I don't know if we want to hear from Joby and Alyssa, perhaps, in terms of the HR issues and what, just where we are before we discuss, or do we... Would you be willing, Joby, just to give us a brief recap and look up from the HR standpoint? And then we can have a discussion.
Sure. You know how to control me, don't you?
Sure. I don't mind. Joby Brogdon, Story County Facility Management Director. I mean, currently where we stand is we're almost wrapped up with putting in plexiglass barriers to protect our employees for on twofold. One, when we bring all employees back to the workplace, we have to do some accommodations to allow for them to work in proximity to one another, and then a lot of other plexiglass barriers in place to protect them from when we do open to the public. Those are probably 99% installed at this point. Other things we've looked at is, you know, local face mask available to the public if they still choose to wear one, hand sanitizer available for the public and employees to use, but when they have to, you know, use community items like ink pens, paper, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't completely acquired all those supplies yet. We have most of those. We have local face masks. We have dispensers for those. Those dispensers showed up yesterday. We're going to begin to install those. We have started to receive shipments of hand sanitizer, that kind of stuff. So we will be beginning to distribute that out. Is there anything specific you have a question about? I mean, we've been outside of the, you know, some of it's kind of hard to bring to mind right now because it's been our life. Most of us are still in the workplace for the last few months,
mm-hmm.
but extensive sanitizing practices have been disinfectant. We've been applying to handrails, desktops, you know, door handles, you name it, we've been applying it. That's daily operation for us.
So you, it sounds to me, it's nice to summarize, like you pretty much got everything done that we thought was necessary to have all employees come back into the workplace.
Correct.
Okay. And a little bit more in terms of the public,
yes.
But you're pretty much there.
Well, pretty much we have the plan is, for the most part there. We still have some meetings with various other elected offices and department heads on issues inside each public waiting area and that kind of stuff. Different signage that we need to address and get hung before we let the public in so that they kind of know where to go and how different offices are going to operate.
Yeah, and what we've said is we don't have to do it's a phase
yep.
reopening anyway, that we don't necessarily have to do both things at the same time.
Correct.
Yep.
And then, you know, we've discussed other options, where, you know, we want employees back in the workplace, kind of getting into habits, you know, working around, you know, because we've had a lot of employees who've been working from home, so they haven't been working around coworkers like some of us have. You know, so getting used to, you know, we do have a face mask policy in place. You know, we're all in this room wearing one right now. You know, and there's some people that are working from home that haven't been working with the face covering
mm-hmm.
on. So, and then just interacting with one another and maintaining your social distancing. So. A phased approach, I believe, is the best way to do it, is bring people in a little at a time.
Okay.
And so we get used to being around people again. Some people haven't worked next to somebody in almost 2 months. That's going to take a little bit of time to get used to doing it again.
So, Joby, what do you think is a little bit of time? Because you and your staff get around in the building a lot more than probably we do, the rest of the people in the room right now. Well, is 2 weeks a practical time?
Yeah, I think a 14-day time period between employees back in the building and getting in that new routine is an appropriate amount of time before we start considering allowing the public back in to have that other layer of appropriate word to use there. Yeah, I think a 14-day time period from the date that we have all appropriate employees back into the workplace, and then we start bringing the public back in. I mean, there we are, and some offices are allowing, you know, by appointment and that kind of stuff currently. So, but.
Supervisor Hedens, do you have any questions for Joby?
Well, I guess kind of my question, so we kind of talked about, you know, kind of what I was hearing from you, Joby, is transitioning people back into the office. And I know some departments already have already done that. I don't know if they're all to full capacity, but they have that. Are you suggesting even just kind of transitioning like part of their staff back in and then transitioning to where they've got old staff in? And then another kind of time frame before we open up to the public?
I asked Alyssa to come up to the microphone because she's been working with the department heads from an HR perspective. And that has to do with an employee matter rather than a facilities matter. I kind of transferred.
Sure. So what I've talked to some of the departments and kind of what their plans are is they are going to slowly bring employees back. Maybe alternating days coming into the office for the first month or two, and then the actual staff. I think it depends on how many employees they have, the functions that they do. But the main concern is that if everybody comes back all at once and there is some exposure within that return, that everybody will have to go self-isolate for 2 weeks, that is a concern. So I think most of the departments and offices are looking at alternating, working at home in the office. They are, we are getting to the point where we do want employees to be back working 40 hours a week in the near future. So
this is Laura. And Lisa, do you have any questions first? I'll let you start and then I'll ask.
Nope, that was my question. Thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to get a little more detailed.
Sure.
First of all, who are we really talking about? Because you said departments, and then you said department and offices. We will not determine when the county attorney brings people back. We will not determine when the recorder brings people back. We will not determine when the treasurer brings people back. We will not determine when the auditor is bringing people back. In fact, the auditor is pretty well full staff, I think, with what's going on. And it sounds like Chad feels the treasurer is going to have to bring back. The sheriff's got a plan already in place. He's still, all right. So we're really talking about bringing back the Board of Supervisors employees that report through us. We're talking about conservation, correct? Because the conservation board delegated to Mike, if I understand it correctly, about, yeah.
I talked to Mike yesterday. He said he's pretty much back to full staff.
Okay, so
rotating hours, opening when they come in, so they're not someplace at the same time when they're in some place. But he says they're back.
Okay, thank you. So the assessor, Wayne, are you on?
Yes, I'm on.
So technically, yes, thank you. Technically, you report to the conference board, although the conference board has pretty much delegated to you. Are you planning on coming in on whatever the Board of Supervisors does?
That was our plan, that we kind of follow what the rest of the building does.
Okay.
Because there shouldn't be an issue.
I envision the same as what the board decided weeks ago when needed to employees go home. They followed suit. They kind of,
right.
The same day we were ready to come back in, we had things in place. We were not ready to have employees workplace. We did not have specific labs. We didn't have policies and procedures in place for
Okay. So that was kind of my first question. Who are we really talking about bringing back?
Yeah.
And the second thing is, then your proposal, to make sure that I understand this, is you want to bring, you want to allow individuals, departments, and or elected officials to decide if they want to bring their people back in alternate days. So, but really the Board of Supervisors wouldn't be making that decision for their departments after you sharing with them why their reasons would be. Could that be done in 14 days? Or do we need 14 days of the people actually working together to get used to bumping into each other and waiting outside the bathroom and not piling into the elevator, or some of the counters are long, not walking?
I think when Joey said 14 days, between the time we bring our employees back into the workplace and over to the public, I think maybe that's a minimum. And here's what I've kind of been thinking is, and this is also from the mayor's call we had the other night, I heard folks say, gee, wouldn't it be nice if we're doing kind of the same things in government around the county, if there was some consistency. And I know Ames said they were going to be opening to the public July 1. So I was just thinking we could have a return to work date of June 1 and an open to the public date of July 1.
I think that's way, I personally don't support that. I think it's way too long. Why Ames said on that call last night they were waiting is because they hadn't done all of the things that we've been so proactive at with the plexiglass, et cetera. So it was their staff recommendation. It was going to take 30 days to outfit a much larger operation to get plexiglass up or whatever. There were also mayors who talked about them coming. They're already up. They never shut down. Then you look at Nevada and Story City, who were really seriously looking at a June 1 day. So we don't have consistency throughout the county. I was reading
the report. They were talking about employees returning to the workplace June 1.
Some of them I saw they were talking about having their
story.
Okay, so we don't have consistency, but I believe that we are ready. Okay, just a few other, few little questions out there to get settled on a couple of things. And so that is my thing. And then the other thing for in HR in general, Alyssa, have you had conversations with other HR heads, with others, that indicate what liability do we have if we require somebody who is a high risk or has a family member that is high risk, if we require them to come back to work, and we're not, I mean, there's only so much we're going to be able to do to keep them from not being exposed.
Like I said previously, we would handle that as a DJ request. We work with the individual, they can request it alternate work locations, they can, other counties, they handle it that way too. We get information from their doctor as to what the alternate work environment would be. If they have a doctor that says they absolutely cannot come back into the workplace and there is no way we can have work from home, this would be considered, they can use those leave their sick leave as an accommodation.
So I haven't sent my question to the attorney's office yet, okay, that I brought up on Wednesday. I still have that one. And it's related to the common areas, once again, about, so if someone's exposed in a common area, all right.
And I think part of the, we would find that alternate location of the builders going into the common area. So, if they need to go in the break room to get food in the refrigerator, it might be something that they are able to bring in the small fridge and put it in there. Off of work, something that we can do that to keep on from that area. I think those are the things you need to work one-on-one with that individual based on their needs, their medical professional's opinion. And I think that's the way we can move
forward. So until we receive something to the contrary about our control over the common areas. Okay, thank you. Yeah, those are my questions.
And I would add one thing there. I think there's, honestly, my concerns about employees and employees being in a safe, safe workplace.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a real difference, a big distinction between bringing all employees back into the workplace and opening to the public. And the reason I say that is we have a lot more control of our employees in terms of, you know, policies and in terms of practices, and it's a limited number of people versus when you open to the public. That's where I see the big concern. I mean, that's where I'm much more concerned. And we said we were going to, you know, there were three things that we were going to look at in making a decision, our benchmarks. Data reflects a 14-day downward trajectory of new COVID-19 positive cases. Mm-hmm. All precautions to help reduce the spread of COVID-19 within Story County government operations are in place, and there's no unanticipated events or trends which would suggest reconsideration of moving forward. The thing that's most within our control is the precautions. We've just heard from Jovi. Mm-hmm. We've got that. Our workplace is going to be one of the safest places around, okay? But when we look, and so that says to me that we've been done everything we can to make our workplace a safe place, except there's the opening to the public, and we can do some things, we can encourage them, but that's where I think we have more wild cards. The other thing I look at when I think about that is data reflects a 14-day downward trajectory of new COVID ID positive cases. And that's out in the community. And we're not seeing that downward trajectory in new cases. Story County is staying fairly stable, but we had three new cases in yesterday's numbers, three the day before. It's not going down. We hit it upward to 12 on Thursday the 7th, but that was, according to Steve Sullivan, said that was a whole bunch of testing that was done. But still, we're not on a downward trajectory. It is small numbers, but the counties around us are going up. The statewide numbers, there is not a downward trajectory in positives. There's not a downward trajectory in deaths.
No, there's an upward trajectory.
Exactly. And I just don't feel like, when you look at community-wide, I don't feel like we're on that trajectory yet. And that, to me, says maybe what we do is we set a date for employees to get back in the workplace, and maybe we wait a little bit on the date of opening to the public till we see what happens the next couple of weeks. And Supervisor Heddens, I'm sorry, I haven't asked you that question. I just started talking. I apologize.
No, you were fine. And I think that's what I was trying to get with my question that I was asking before. Are we transitioning employees back first before we open to the public? And that's what I was trying to get clarified, because we do have several precautions in place. Is it that we can start bringing employees back? And then do we need to, still look at when we open up to the public? Story County, I just took a quick look, is up to 73 cases. So we are still seeing, an incline.
We're always going to see an incline in total case numbers, right? It's, what we're looking at is how many per day. And I will just tell you, my husband, who deals with statistics a lot, okay, or numbers, is, he said, Story County, we're so low right now that, what's the difference between one and three? There isn't any from a statistical difference when you look at almost 100,000 residents.
That's so, what we said, nine.
Sure.
Huh? This is a nine increase.
Okay, thank you. So I just want to point that out, that, as we start, I'm not saying we start today, because you're right, we haven't met our whole benchmarks, and the death rates are climbing for the state, and we're very lucky to have only had one so far.
Well,
but I just talked about 14
answers. Once we looked at June 1st as a return to work date for everybody, and that means you can't before, but by June 1st, so then May 31st would be when we would no longer have the admin leave. Admin leave still allowed through May 31st, June 1st being the return to work day. Is that, and to maybe think about where we go from that, I think we need to say we give at least 2 weeks for our committee to have ready our open to the public, but that doesn't mean we have to open to the public 2 weeks after that.
And I just want to clarify one thing. You say June 1st, everybody's back to work 40 hours. Departments are still able to stagger the teleworkers coming into the office if they for a few weeks, but we want every employee back in the physical office mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be some situations where
I would like people to be in some of the time to get used to it, because that's the purpose. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, they're still going to be some telework, but we want people to yeah. get used to being back in the workplace. If somebody wants to say to somebody, here's my gut week, you can telework one day a week, or you can tell this much of it, but you need to be back in the workplace for a significant amount of time.
Yeah. And that's what I've seen from the department plan, is that okay. they, yeah, that they will have, you know, they might have one department, say they have three employees, they'll have two working one day, one the next, so that they do, if they do get an exposure, they do have that one person to come in. Now, at some point, we're all going to be in the workplace, and there isn't a lot you can do. We'll just have to mitigate that at that point. But I think starting June 1st, or even now, we're seeing a lot of people stagger that, and more people in. That's what we have everybody in.
So
I just didn't know if the board indicated wanted everybody in the office by June 1st, or if they were going to say, you know, the first couple of weeks, it's okay to have, you know, alternate, but eventually we do intend to have everybody in.
We want everybody working their schedule.
They
have
to work one year. Yep.
Everybody, well, there's some part time.
Yep. Yep.
Everybody working their regularly scheduled workouts.
Yeah.
And some of that may be, yeah, and in the workplace for a significant amount of that time.
So, and then the, like, if it's a Board of Supervisors department that already is split a staff or staggered hours, we want the majority of their hours to be together again so that they're used to working around each other. So, you know, the philosophy for at least the Board of Supervised or accountable, reportable, or I've seen all different words and different policies, okay, to the Board of Supervisors, the goal is to get people back to get used to working to each other. So with the staggered hours, if they don't work anything that overlaps, and they normally would, because I'm not talking about like the facility staff, but I'm talking about animal control, for example, who they need to get back to working together during this period. That's what we're saying, is learn to work together. And, you know, that P&D, they're pretty much working from home. We're going to need you guys to come back. And environmental health technically, once again, reports to the Board of Health. But there, we would ask that Margaret adopt that, or the Board of Health has to be and says, no, we're not going to, because once again, they share that physical space. So that's what we're looking at. IT coming back in to learning to work together again. So I think that's, I think, the expectation.
I'm going to try to write something short so we can get that in motion.
Sounds good. But then after that, that's what the next question was, is 14 days enough? And I'm advocating for so by mid-June, if the indicators are there that we're on downward trajectories, reopening the public. I'm hearing Supervisor Merkin indicate that she'd like to see it around July 1, even if, you know, the trajectories are moving down. And I don't want to speak for her. I'm just trying to figure out where our difference is. Sure. Okay.
Yeah, so this is Laura. This is Lisa. To throw on some comments there, I'm just wondering if we, you know, do we want at this particular time to look at a motion of when we want people back and then kind of revisit the opening to the public as, you know, like a board meet in another week or two where we, you know,
yeah.
I'm just wondering, do you have to make it all right now on it, or do we want to see where things are at as people are coming back and then making that determination?
I'm open to doing these separately. One today about this is the target date to come back to work and look at the reopen to the public as a separate discussion in a week or a couple weeks.
Okay. Here's the motion that I would suggest that all employees return to the workplace and work in regularly scheduled hours by June 1, and then administrative pay ends May 31st, and that we acknowledge that some staggered shifts or start times might occur, and some telework may still be allowed.
Can you read it one more time, Linda?
All employees are to return to the workplace and to working regularly scheduled hours by June 1. Administrative pay that we've been granting for this, because we have people working from home or not working, the administrative pay ends May 31st, and that we acknowledge that some split shifts or staggered shifts or start times might occur, and that some telework may still be allowed. Added split shifts, I think, the second time I read that, because I just realized it might be actually an 8-hour shift and another 8-hour shift, or it might be whatever power it wants with it.
I think that sounds reasonable to me. So is it my turn to make the motion?
It is.
Yeah, so I will make the motion as stated.
And I would just like to amend, at the end of this, as allowed and approved by your elected officials.
I'll accept that.
Okay, thank you.
This is Margaret.
Yes,
this is Margaret. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So two comments. I'm just wondering about Board of Health and conservation folks, if where we sit in this. And then also, staggering. The point of staggering is to have two completely separate teams that don't cross paths, so that if one team is exposed, then they can all go home for 14 days or however long, and then the other team can sweep in and replace them. So if we're going to stagger but still spend most of our time together, we may as well just all be there 40 hours.
Well,
thank
with
you.
That social distancing, with that face covering, with that sanitation, with a lot of things that we've put are the precautions without a reasonable in the workplace. That would just be my thought about that. Alyssa, did you have you were starting to...
My only concern was, as approved by the elected officials, that work in all offices is a board of supervisors office, but that would determine if we have Tuesday morning work.
Correct. So if a department wanted to still stagger, but the supervisors didn't want that department to stagger, the supervisors would need to make that call if they report to the supervisors. Correct.
I hear two different things.
All right.
Yeah, I'm getting some feedback, so I'm not hearing very well.
So in the event of the department that report to the Board of Supervisors, it would be needed by the supervisors to agree to allow that department to stagger. And otherwise, they come back to work so we would need to have a separate conversation if one of our departments came to us that would report to us, okay, through you two. I want to have us have the ability to make that decision. Okay. Yes. And that's why I added it, is that so we don't have a department on its own think it needs to continue a certain way, when the goals and the needs of the population and the goals and the needs of actually to perform normal function, to be operating again, are circumvented.
The motion said we acknowledge that some split shifts or staggered shifts or start times might occur and that some telework may still be allowed. I think the fact that in our motion we acknowledge that empowers our department heads to do what they need to do for the best management of their department.
I still have a problem with what's happening in animal control, and I want that to, if animal control wants to start the stagger, I would not stand the vote on it.
Can I just comment on that?
Yes.
Department?
Yes.
There's no more admin pay. So if they are not working hours, they will not be paid for hours. So any department that can't telework, those out, they will only be paid for hours that they actually work. So that encourages the department to look at how do we get employees back in the workplace to put in their full 40 hours each week. If they don't, they will need to, and they want to get paid, the employee will have to use their own leave. So there's no more admin.
Thank you. Okay,
so
thank you.
That
addresses that.
It does. It
does. And we've got our other one.
So the question is, since there was a motion and a second, would there need to be a withdrawal of the motion and a new one restated?
Well,
I withdraw my friendly amendment.
That would
work. You accept my withdrawal.
I will second that.
So the motion then is as I originally read it.
Okay.
Good. Any further discussion? Okay, then Laura, let's see. Lisa, this was your motion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Hedden?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Motion carries.
So then, is Margaret still on?
Yes. Yeah.
So Margaret was still asking about Board of Health and Conservation. And I guess we kind of asked, didn't hear from Mike, but yeah.
I think Conservation approved what the board
did.
So Conservation has approved it. Did the Board of Health approve what the board had done in place?
I believe they did, yes, they approved and whatever moving forward.
And moving forward. I think that answers it.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, hi.
Can you hear me? Yeah, hey. Alyssa's right. I think in the second round maybe of changes early on in this, the Conservation Board did make that decision to accept any subsequent changes to personnel that the supervisors do.
Okay, thank you. So where we are now is we did just take action on establishing dates for employees to return to the workplace motion, and we have decided that we are not at this point setting a date for opening to the public. We're going to keep watching the numbers and the trajectories and also seeing whatever else is happening in the community. I know we see a lot of concerns that things open up for what might happen. So I think that was number three on our list of benchmarks. So I think we'll keep discussing it with the understanding, as we've talked about, that it would be really good give at least two weeks to people to after June 1 to make sure that we're ready to open to the public. So it's another internally what can we control, and then again looking at the externals, what's happening out there in the community. And I think that to me as a public official and elected official, I think that's the most important thing is to be looking not just for what we can control, but what are the other things out there around us that we can control. So I think this is a good decision. And I've seen Supervisor Olson nod, and I'm hearing Supervisor Hedden's nodding.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Pardon me.
Okay. Good discussion. It's 12:30, so we have no other items. We have public comment on item 16. Have I skipped anything? Going twice. We're at public comment then. Are there any text messages?
There are not. Thank you.
Any members of the public on the phone who would like to make a comment?
Brenda, this is Jerry in Planning and Development. Can I ask something or get a clarification?
Yeah.
The board adopted the county space covering policy for the employees, and recently the elected officials have weighed in on that policy and have stated that they acknowledge it and that they'll likely use it as a guideline. Will that be treated as an option then? And how will that impact the rest of the departments that will be following?
It is not treated as an option for the departments that are under the supervisors. It's because we adopted it as a policy, not as guidance.
Right, I understand that, but if in the admin building we've got 10 departments, including the board supervisors, and if only half of those departments are following that policy, I'm just wondering how effective our policy will be.
My understanding is that the elected officials are planning to have their employees wear face coverings in the common areas. So that was the issue at hand, and so I think we will be okay as far as that goes. Yes, employees governed under the board supervisors, they will be required to have them wear. But I have had conversations with the elected officials, and they do see the importance that face coverings are worn in hallways in common areas. So my understanding is that they are going to implement that within their office. So, and I know as you walk out of the auditor's office, there is a sign that says, please put your face covering on. So I understand that there may be some concerns from employees, but that is my understanding of how the elected officials are going to implement that. If that makes sense.
Does that answer your question, Jared?
Yeah, that's helpful, and I appreciate it. And we will have some questions from our staff, so I do appreciate that response.
Okay.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you. And any elected officials who are within earshot, I thank you very much as well.
If I could just, because I just realized, so we have another unit in this building that is not under the Board of Supervisors, and that's the Emergency Management Team. So I guess the Emergency Management Board, do they delegate that decision to Keith to comply with?
Well, I'm going to talk to Keith and Leah.
All right, thank you. Just, you know, we've got a lot of mix here. Thank you.
Okay, I'm writing myself a note. Just hold on a second. Anything else? Okay. In that case, we are at adjournment, so I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
It's my turn. I move that we adjourn.
Olson?
Aye.
Pezin?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. We adjourn.
All right.